This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 825 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel continues to kill and injure Palestinians across the Gaza Strip while bombing, shelling, and destroying areas on both sides of the vague yellow line, and while preventing necessary humanitarian aid, medical supplies, caravans, and shelter materials from entering. Just hours ago, on Thursday, Israeli forces killed at least three Palestinians, including children, and injured dozens in drone attacks on tent shelters in the Mawasi area of Khan Yunis. Other attacks on Thursday were reported in Jabalia in northern Gaza, also on tent shelters housing forcibly displaced Palestinians. On Wednesday evening, an Israeli airstrike bombed the home of a family in the Tufah neighborhood of Gaza City, killing at least two Palestinians and injuring several others. Israel killed a five-year-old child and her uncle on Monday, who were inside a tent shelter in the Mawasi Khan Yunis displacement camp. Two other children were wounded in the attack, according to hospital officials. On January 6th, a 15-year-old child, Abdulrahman Al-Fajim, was killed by Israeli artillery shelling targeting the Bani Suhaila area of eastern Khan Yunis. Journalist Ibrahim Kanan captured footage of Abdulrahman's family painfully grieving over his body. Israeli forces killed three Palestinians, including a fisherman, on January 4th in separate attacks in Khan Yunis, as the Israeli army destroyed more infrastructure in northern Gaza. Al Jazeera reported that quadcopter drones dropped explosives on several homes and fired artillery shells in areas of eastern Gaza City. On January 2nd, a man was killed in eastern Khan Yunis. Journalist Mazen Brim captured footage of his family and loved ones mourning over his body. Brim reported that Ahmed Hossam Zidan Naim was shot and killed by an Israeli gun mounted on a crane. Israeli forces have not stopped destroying homes and structures on both sides of the invisible and ever-moving so-called yellow line. On January 3rd, reporter Tamar Dalul recorded Israeli demolitions of residential buildings inside the Zaytun neighborhood southeast of Gaza City. Journalist Abid Sabah walked through the ruins of Jabalia refugee camp on January 2nd. Where Israeli forces have continuously destroyed homes, tent shelters, and streets in the green zone west of the so-called yellow line. He says, quote, "This is the explosion that just happened. This is an area that is supposed to be a green area. People were unable to return to this place because of these daily acts of Israeli violations and targeting."
هذه الانفجارات اللي سمعتوها الان في منطقه خضراء هذا مخيم جباليا احنا في قلب المخيم هذه المنطقه المفترض ان تكون منطقه خضراء هذا الشارع تحديدا هو الشارع المؤدي الى المربع الاصفر هذا هو الانفجار اللي حصل الان هذه منطقه المفترض تكون خضراء الناس ما قدرت ترجع لهذا المكان بسبب هذه الأفعال اليومية من خروقات واستهدافات إسرائيلية خيام بسيطة أو أعداد قليلة من الناس اللي قدرت ترجع لهذه المناطق لكن فعليا الوضع كثير صعب في هذه المنطقة بشكل يومي في خروقات وفي استهدافات إسرائيلية.
That was reporter Abid Sabah in Jabalia refugee camp. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza warned this week that the widespread and deepening shortage of medical supplies due to Israel's ongoing blockade is putting patients at serious risk. On Wednesday, the Health Ministry said that the lack of laboratory consumables includes a shortage of 75% of needed chemistry testing materials and a 90% depletion of blood bank and blood transfusion supplies. Such shortages are, quote, exacerbating the crisis to the point where it may hinder patient diagnoses and surgical procedures. essential tests for patients with endocrine disorders, cancer, kidney transplants, electrolyte imbalances, and blood count panels have been suspended, the ministry added. At the same time, the Israeli government announced it was revoking the operating licenses from nearly 40 international human rights and humanitarian organizations, many of which have been working in the occupied West Bank and Gaza for decades and have helped coordinate the humanitarian response in lieu of Israel's systematic attacks on and undermining of the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, or UNRWA. The Israeli government had approved the registration process plan in March 2025 to come into effect on January 1, 2026. Among the 37 groups Israel is targeting are Doctors Without Borders, the Norwegian Refugee Council, Oxfam, Care International, Relief International, Mercy Corps, Medical Aid for Palestinians, the American Friends Service Committee, and Defense for Children International Palestine. The Israeli decision to not renew the licenses of these organizations was announced with the pretext of non-compliance with new, unjust, and arbitrary registration conditions imposed by the Israeli authorities, said Euromed Human Rights Monitor. Quote, the new registration conditions invoked by Israel are not limited to technical administrative requirements, the human rights group stated. They are based on a system of criteria used as tools of inclusion or exclusion and include punitive standards linked to an organization's positions or those of any of its staff on boycott, what Israel terms delegitimization, or support for international accountability mechanisms. Israel's registration scheme, Euromed noted, imposes requirements obliging these groups to submit extensive and sensitive data on their staff, particularly Palestinian employees working inside the Gaza Strip, along with detailed information on funding sources, partners, operational mechanisms, and field movements. These demands, quote, go far beyond legitimate administrative oversight and amount to the collection of data that could expose identities and networks, placing individuals at risk of targeting, persecution, or blackmail. This decision, Euromed added, is designed to create ever more unlivable conditions with the aim of forcibly displacing the population. Israeli claims about the existence of alternatives are nothing more than deliberate deception. No other local or international actor possesses the logistical capacity or infrastructure to fill this massive gap, particularly amid escalating Israeli restrictions on humanitarian organizations and on the entry of aid and essential materials into the Gaza Strip. It also forms part of a broader Israeli strategy to undermine independent access to facts on the ground and monopolize the narrative of events in Gaza, the group says. Quote, foreign doctors and international aid workers serve as independent eyewitnesses capable of observing and documenting patterns of violations, including recurring injury types, the effects of weapons used, indicators of famine and shortages of essential supplies, and conveying these findings to relevant international bodies. Their presence has even partially mitigated the isolation imposed on Gaza since October 2023. The American Friends Service Committee, which began working in Gaza in 1948 to organize relief efforts for Palestinian refugees who had been expelled from their land by Israel, says that it joins the other international organizations in calling on Israel to remove these restrictions. This past week, the AFSC stated that, quote, these requirements are part of a systematic effort to arbitrarily criminalize humanitarian organizations, dismantle aid infrastructure, and inflict further harm on Gaza's civilian population. They are in violation of international law and humanitarian principles. The registration process, the AFSC remarked, quote, compromises humanitarian principles, independence, and access to civic space. It also imposes prohibitively difficult reporting requirements and requires organizations to submit complete staff lists and other sensitive information about staff and their families to the Israeli government. The International Court of Justice has ruled that Israel's occupation in the Palestinian territory is unlawful. Disclosing operational information to a government credibly accused of genocide and apartheid endangers the lives of our staff and partners. Israel has already killed more than 500 aid workers since October 2023. For these reasons, AFSC made the difficult decision to not reapply for registration with the Israeli government. The European Commission, for its part, issued a toothless condemnation of Israel's registration restrictions on international organizations. Quote, "To deliver aid rapidly, safely, and at the scale required, international NGOs must be able to operate in a sustained and predictable way. Without them, life-saving assistance cannot reach people in need," the Commission observed. But it did not offer even a threat of revocation of funds, weapons, or political cover for Israel and its crimes of ongoing genocide carried out by either bombs or bureaucracy. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces shot and wounded a Palestinian teenaged child on Wednesday during an invasion into the town of Beita and a nearby village south of Nablus. The Palestine Red Crescent Society said that the 17-year-old boy was shot in the abdomen. On January 5th, Israeli forces stormed Bir Zeit University near Ramallah, opening fire on students during the assault. 11 Palestinians were injured, 3 by live fire, 3 by shrapnel, and 5 who were treated for tear gas inhalation, according to the health ministry. The Palestine Red Crescent Society said that 3 students were shot in the legs and hospitalized for treatment. Local sources told the Anadolu news agency that Israeli forces raided the campus following a student event held in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails and coincided with preparations to screen the film The Voice of Hind Rajab, the true story of the 5-year-old girl in January 2024 who was trapped inside a car along with the corpses of her family members who were killed by Israeli soldiers, with the soldiers executing Hind just hours later, ultimately shooting the car more than 350 times and evading justice ever since. Israeli forces invaded the campus shortly before the scheduled film screening, which had been planned as part of student-led activities, the sources told Anadolu. Bir Zeit University student Mohamed Horeini narrated the raid on his Instagram account.
No one can go in and out from the university. It's all surrounded.
It seems that he's aiming to shoot.
They're now shooting live bullets.
One student was shot in the leg. Another injury. 9 people were shot and at least 32 suffered suffocation from tear gas and shrapnel wounds by the stun grenades.
They're now on the entrances. It seems that they are going to leave. No, they're not going to.
This is part of the daily life for the Palestinian students under occupation. Education is controlled and terrorized by the occupation. How much they don't want Palestinians to be educated was part of our struggle against the occupation.
That was Mohamed Horeini on campus at Bir Zeit University on Monday. Horeini is the co-founder of Youth of Samud, a human rights group inside the besieged villages of Masafer Yatta, south of Al-Khalil in the West Bank. Israel arrested and abducted Palestinian journalist Inas Ikhlawi after storming her home in the town of Itna in the southern West Bank earlier this week. The Palestinian Center for Development and Media Freedoms condemned Ikhlawi's arrest and detention, saying they consider it an arbitrary arrest that is part of a systematic policy targeting Palestinian journalists. The center said that this was the second arrest and abduction of journalists this week. Reporter Salim Suhail al-Salman was arrested by Israeli forces on January 1st after storming his house in the southern neighborhood of Tulkarem City, seizing his phone and the phones of several family members. Just weeks ago, on December 26th, Israeli forces abducted leading political researcher and writer Sami Orabi from his home in the town of Rafat, north of Jerusalem. Orabi was placed under a 6-month administrative detention order, a draconian measure without charge or trial. Israeli forces threatened a children's football field with demolition orders this week in the Aida refugee camp in Bethlehem. A journalist with Mondo Weiss reported from the pitch on January 6th.
Israel has issued a demolition order to demolish this children's football field in Aida refugee camp. And this is probably the last training they're going to have on this football pitch before the military comes in and turns it all into rubble and then bill Aida Youth Center for the cost. The football pitch has been a source of joy for the kids here. It's a break from the overcrowded refugee camp surrounded by a giant wall, several military watchtowers, and frequent Israeli military attacks on the area. It fosters hope, which is exactly why Israel wants to demolish it, just like they do to schools, homes, and playgrounds all across Palestine. This is a message to the community here, that resilience will be punished, even if it's just kids playing football.
That was from Mondo Weiss. On January 4th, Israeli forces expelled a family from their home in the Batan al-Hawa neighborhood of Silwan in occupied East Jerusalem, and handed it over to a group of Israeli settlers with Ataret Kohanim, an organization that facilitates the appropriation of Palestinian property in Jerusalem. As a result, 8 people, including 3 children, were displaced in favor of the Israeli settler organization, the United Nations reported. According to the family, in November 2025, the Israeli Supreme Court rejected the family's appeal. The family subsequently filed another petition and had a hearing scheduled for December 21st. However, prior to the court's ruling, the Israeli Enforcement and Collection Authority issued a final eviction notice, ordering the family to vacate the property by January 5th. Following the expulsion, Israeli settlers took over the building, sealed its doors and windows with metal sheets, and raised Israeli flags over the home. This is the 6th expulsion of Palestinians in Batan al-Hawa since February 2024, which in total has resulted in the displacement of 13 Palestinian families, comprising 57 people, including 27 children. These families are among more than 90 families in Batan al-Hawa, comprising over 450 people and 200 children, who have been at risk of forced displacement due to eviction cases filed against them by the Ataret Kohanim Settler Organization, the UN said. Meanwhile, Israeli forces continue to demolish homes in Tulkarem. On the last day of 2025, Israeli military bulldozers began demolishing dozens of homes in the Nur Shams refugee camp. According to local community sources, Israeli authorities rejected a legal request submitted on behalf of the families to suspend the demolitions that targeted both single-family houses and multi-unit residential buildings, affecting approximately 70 households, all of whom had already been displaced from the camp, the United Nations stated. Israeli bulldozers and military forces raided the town of Anata, north of Jerusalem, on Wednesday and demolished an iron factory under the pretext of construction without an Israeli permit. And Israeli municipal officials issued a demolition order for part of a Palestinian elementary school and kindergarten in the Old City of Jerusalem this week. The Jerusalem governorate said in a statement that the occupation municipality granted the school administration a 1-week deadline to demolish the upper section, which spans 35 square meters, warning that it would carry out the demolition itself if the order is not implemented, Wafa News reported. Under the pretext of building without permits, which are rarely granted to Palestinians in the city, the Israeli municipality has been demolishing or forcing Palestinians to demolish their own houses as part of a policy aimed at restricting Palestinian expansion and growth in occupied Jerusalem, Wafa added. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Israel Block's entry of eye drops for blind people in Gaza by Saeed Al-Salul, writing from Gaza. Before the genocide erupted in the Gaza Strip, specialized institutions for people who were blind or had limited vision worked actively despite the tight siege on the enclave, Saeed writes. The UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA, ran a rehabilitation center for the visually impaired, offering programs to children aged 8 to 12. UNRWA's rehabilitation center also provided braille machines, canes, visual aids, and recreational activities like sports and music. Another governmental school located in Al-Zahra neighborhood in the central Gaza Strip offered people who were blind or with limited vision middle and secondary education. The Islamic University of Gaza also embraced blind students. It provided them with accessible facilities, specialized technical tools, dedicated staff, and an adapted inclusion approach. Ahmed Abu Al-Jidyan, who is completely blind and a close friend of this writer, earned distinction in some courses as a student of English at the Islamic University. The Islamic University was the spark that guided our hearts to enlightenment, Abu Al-Jidyan said. In November 2021, a few months before his graduation, Abu Al-Jidyan was able to write a play and, alongside other classmates, perform it before a large audience within the university. After graduating in 2022, he started working as a freelance content writer in digital advocacy. In October 2023, Abu Al-Jidyan's life was upended when he and his family were forced to flee their house in Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza, relocating to a tent in Deir Abalah, central Gaza Strip. In May 2024, Abu Al-Jidyan received news that he said he couldn't bear. Their house was destroyed. As a blind person, he struggled to get food aid and medicine he used to get before the genocide due to the displacement and the lack of communication with the specialized centers which had previously helped him. Abu Al-Jidyan also couldn't continue his job as the connection to the internet in the tent was scarce, and he had already lost his laptop in his house back in Jabalia. Even in the ceasefire now, life lost its meaning, Abu Al-Jidyan said, adding that the October ceasefire is a fragile one. It wasn't only his life that was upended. So were the lives of the other 10,000 pre-genocide people who were blind or had limited vision in Gaza. The Electronic Intifada interviewed Ali Tuaima, the director of the Gaza Forum Association for the Visually Impaired, a place aiding people who are blind or have limited vision. Many people with visual impairments were killed during this war, while some suffered double disability, a visual and physical one, Tuaima said. Many others remain imprisoned and were tortured by the occupation. Tuaima said that currently there is not a single rehabilitation center for blind people in Gaza. From the first days of the genocide, Israel bombed the Islamic University of Gaza and later in February 2024, rendered the UNRWA's rehabilitation center out of service. Israel also, Tuaima said, obliterated schools or institutions for blind people, including the building that housed Tuaima's association. In September, the Ministry of Health in Gaza reported that since October 2023, more than 1,500 people were added to the 10,000 people who are blind or with limited vision in Gaza before the genocidal war began. As Israel still prevents the entry of eye drops and treatments, nearly 4,500 people were at risk of having eye conditions, up from 4,000 in May. That increase aligns with accounts Tuaima, the director of the Association for Blind People, received from several doctors, who told him that some of the people with pre-existing eye conditions or diseases lost their sight due to the lack of proper surgical instruments and treatments while the vision of others deteriorated. Tuaima and his association were unable to provide the necessary treatments for people with eye conditions as Israel hinders the entry of essential medicines. Everything related to the lives of the blind has become piles of rubble. There is no training, no rehabilitation, no education, no employment, no assistive devices, and a shortage of medications, Tuaima said. We call upon local and international community organizations and human rights organizations to take serious action to assist people with disabilities in general and those with visual impairments in particular. Those are excerpts from Israel Block's entry of eye drops for blind people in Gaza by Saeed Al-Salul, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. Last week, we showed the celebration for a cadre of physicians who studied for and passed their medical boards while surviving the genocide. This week, a graduation ceremony was held for 230 medical doctors outside Al Shifa Hospital. As social media user Aboud Batah commented, quote, "These graduates did not learn medicine in safe classrooms, but in the field, among the wounded and the martyrs, under bombardment and with limited resources. They learned what it means to be a doctor, a human being first and foremost, and how to save lives when death is so close." An enormous banner was hung on the destroyed facade of Al-Shifa Hospital, commemorating the deans of the Faculty of Medicine and senior doctors who were executed by Israel. Dr. Izzedine Lulu, one of these graduates, spoke with members of Doctors Against Genocide about the ceremony and what it means to complete medical school during a genocide.
We were able to stand yesterday and celebrate 230 newly graduated doctors. Until yesterday, I was one of these students, and at the same time, I was also one of the organizers of this graduation ceremony through the SME Foundation, with the sponsors of Doctor Against Genocide and some of the other organization with the Peace and Human Smile. That dual role matters because this graduation was not organized for students or for foundations from outside. It was organized by people who lived the same reality, walked the same corridors, and studied under the same conditions. This was the largest medical graduation ceremony held in Gaza during the war. It took place at Al-Shifa Medical Complex, a place when a place known globally, not just a hospital, but as a symbol of suffering and medical resistance. These students did not study medicine in normal circumstances. They studied during bombardment, displacement, hunger, electricity cuts, and the loss of teachers, classmates, and family members. Many of them would attend doctors after night of air strikes. Some came to clinical training straight from funerals, and yet they graduated. That alone tells you something powerful about who these future doctors are, inshallah, like Dr. Adnan Al-Borj.
That was Dr. Izzedine Lulu speaking to Doctors Against Genocide earlier this week. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.